This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It is a bittersweet day today on the Second Captain's Podcast. Sweet because Ken Early is back from holidays, and a very warm welcome back, Ken.
Hello, Owen. How are you?
Oh, I'm absolutely fine. But it's bitter because Murph comes to us in a state of...
Hold on a second here there. I'm not bitter, really.
No, we're about to find out. You're certainly going to be in a state of deep introspection post All-Ireland final defeat.
That's more like...
Welcome to the show, everybody. The Clifford and Walsh of the punditry game coming up. That's Flynn and McConville, obviously. We'll get into the finer points of Kerry's triumph with the two boys. But, Murph, I have so many questions. The first one being, did you attend the Kerry after party in D2 that was so heavily promoted last week by David Clifford?
David Clifford!
As you rumbled.
I have to say, there were a lot of likes for that tweet from last Thursday landing in my Twitter notifications at around 7 or 8 o'clock yesterday. So people, you know, they waited their time. They waited their time and then they struck. Which is, of course, their prerogative.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I have to say, I was watching it with my father-in-law, and it was him who kind of said that to me. I wonder will Murphy go into the Kerry party.
And so, oh, I bet you were full of laughs, weren't
Ken,
you?
Ken, I have to say, right, I spent a lot of time with Murph last week. It always seems a bit more intense as well when you're not around. So it seems to be a lot of myself and Murph. Yeah. We obviously were doing the podcasts. The radio show started up last week. Mm. We spent Saturday night at the Galway International Arts Festival. That is in Galway.
What? Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were doing a chat there, so I...
Oh, what was it?
Yeah.
It wasn't just a visit. It was like, it was business.
No, it was on business.
Strict
Ken.
Business, Ken. We were talking sport. They're bringing a bit of sport into the arts scene there, Ken. But I'm going sideways here. My point being, I was feeling quite nervous by the time the match rolled around yesterday. Like, way more nervous than almost any other match that hasn't involved Dublin. So I can only imagine, Kieran.
Because it would Murph would go into one of his rages.
My boy Murph, it was... I wanted Kieran to be happy. I wanted him to enjoy the day. I wanted all the Murphy family and the extended family to just have a good day out. Their first All-Ireland football final in more than 20 years. So how did it go down, Murph? How was your day?
Well, it was an amazing day, Owen. We did actually have a lot of fun. My auntie's apartment in Glasnevin is ground zero on days such as this. And at various... I think the total over the course of like the 3 hours before the game was 17 people had visited at various stages, all being fed by Mary. So it was very sweet. Brilliant. Like, I was very nervous, so I had to drive back from Galway yesterday morning. So I was part of the convoy, which I hadn't obviously done in like 21 years.
So was I, and I took your advice to leave at the crack of dawn. Don't want to be leaving that too late.
So the convoy was, we were definitely at the head of the convoy, Owen. It wasn't that manic. I mean, I know a couple of buzzers were following behind me, and like by 11 o'clock at the toll booth, it was like, you know, end of day stuff. So that was
an eye-opener for me. An eye-opener about how smug one feels when, because, you know, all my All-Irelands are just get the bus into town.
Hop on public transport for €2.
God, I felt smug when I left early and I got to that toll. There was just no traffic at all. I was like, geez, I'm just brilliant. But anyway, continue.
Nailed it again. I was very nervous kind of when I was like by myself. And by myself, I mean, you know, my wife asleep beside me in the car. So me just alone with my thoughts for 2.5 hours. But then once I actually met all of my family, the nerves kind of melted away. It was just a delight. It was a delightful day. And then the football begins and, you know, Shane Walsh starts doing what he what he did in the first half. And obviously, like, excitement levels are just completely off the charts at that stage. And, you know, we weren't able to keep it up. Unfortunately, Kerry just outlasted us. So, bitter disappointment. Of course, you used the word bitter. I'm not bitter, but the disappointment was
You're bitterly disappointed, as opposed to... Yes, you're not bitter about the free, about the soft free.
It was this topic of fevered speculation, obviously, after the game. I don't think it was a free in. I definitely don't think it was a free out. Anyway, John Daly was not being fouled. I don't know that he was holding on to Killian Spillane's arm for long enough for it to be considered a free in either. But we'll get into all that with the lads, because at the end of the day, I mean, Clifford kicked the point, but then they kicked the next third. Hand passed the next three. But, you know, they pushed for home. They did what they had to do. And if the free hadn't been given, there really isn't a whole pile of evidence to suggest that they wouldn't have gone ahead and won the game a different way. So that's the... Yeah, like, that's kind of the... You know, Gola just didn't do enough in the last 10 minutes to say that was a pivotal moment. I mean, it was a very important moment for sure, but was it a turning point? I'm less sure of that.
No, you seem very magnanimous, Murph. I mean, that magnanimity didn't extend to actually attending Kerry's post-match party. Where did you end up? Where did the night take you?
I had a couple of drinks on Cable Street, and then I went to the All-Ireland Football Final Banquet. The Galway All-Ireland Football Final Banquet.
sounds grim.
No, it wasn't actually. It was really nice. I left at, like, I don't know, 12 or half 12 maybe. I did kind of feel like the party was just getting started. I slunk away at that stage. Suffice to say, if Galway had won, it would have been one of the all-time great nights, because I knew so many people there, so many people from home. It would have been gearing up to have been an amazing... I mean, I can't even begin to describe the state I would
you
have
wouldn't
appeared
be talking
in
to
Gullet,
us
wouldn't
right
this?
Now.
Yeah.
He's a pro to his bootstraps, Ken. He would have been talking in some guys.
I mean, I'm sitting here having watched the entire game back already this morning. So, I mean, there is you know, my enthusiasm for talking about a Galway All-Ireland final win, Ken, would probably beat any possible hangover.
Can anyone go to these things, or do you have to be like the James Nesbitt of Galway?
I'm here.
To get in, like, I mean, if I turned up, would people be like, yeah, you know, you can head in wherever you are?
No, it was not. It was a ticketed event, Ken.
Okay.
Yeah, and certainly the likes of you. Well, no.
Maybe it's one of your plus three.
I don't think so, Ken. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sorry.
I have to say, I felt the tide turn at halftime. Or if once the couple of Spillanes went on, and you're thinking, oh, it's Pat Spillane's last game on RTE. They've both gone on. This feels very sort of peak Kerry for them to win this All-Ireland in this scenario. And then Spillane, obviously, a lot of people would have seen him. He spoke brilliantly afterwards about
amazing.
His father, who I didn't know anything about this.
I never knew that either.
Died a couple of days after. He was a selector with Kerry in the 60s and had a bit of trouble before one of the matches, but didn't get it seen to. Anyway, he died a couple of days after this
Kerry-Galway final of 64.
Galway-Kerry game, which was all being brought back into his head. But even when I saw, even before I got that emotional, which is when I saw the nephews go on, I thought, oh, this might swing it. And obviously, it's, you know, it was more about the tactical change rather than just some sort of Kerry-ness, Spillane-ness. They did just start all playing a hell of a lot better in the second half. But why don't we get into this in more detail now, for the final time, this championship campaign with Flynn McCovell.
Benny is my second captain.
Second captain, that's a humorous competition.
I saw that. Important men for my selection.
What is it all about?
There's no tennis as bold as a peak.
David Clifford! Dublin!
I love me county.
It's a dump.
We're going to do it.
I think one of the most remarkable achievements of Galway this season is how they swung Paul Flynn's opinion around to such an extent that he actually predicted a Galway win in the end. It didn't quite happen though. How are you, Paul?
Good, thanks. Oh, yeah, it didn't quite happen, but it was a cracking game.
It was a cracking game. Oisín, how are you?
Oh, and his form?
Not too bad. We have to say Murphy's been quite...
How's your mate?
That's the big question. He seems very magnanimous so far. Murph, do you want to talk to Oisín about how you're feeling about things?
No, I'm doing fine, Oisín, you know? I'm doing fine. I think we were outlasted, is what happened.
Good point.
We'll get into all of it, but funny, even thinking last night about what a difference Ian Burke, our last All-Star from 2018, Peter Cook, who opted out this year, Sean Mulcairn, who injured his knee terribly in a Sigurdsson Cup final, and Michael Daly, who wasn't there either. If you look at those four guys, are back in the squad next year. The difference, which was kind of just energy in the last kind of 10-15 minutes, you know, I think that more than anything else in ways is kind of the thing that means you can afford to be a little bit more positive today than maybe you otherwise would be.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cracking game, Oisín, first of all, wasn't it? It was sort of there or thereabouts the entire game. You never really knew what was going to happen bar until the last couple of minutes.
It had everything but the right down the stretch, but the last six or seven minutes probably. Other than that, I thought it had everything. I have to say, lads, like, you expected to sit back and analyse a game like that, and there was a period after half time, 12 and a half minutes, 10 points in play, swung one way or the other, and I just sat back and loved it. Every minute of it. And I could see, he kept glancing over towards the sideline because it's interesting, you know, there's games that just take on a life of their own, and sort of, you know, as a manager, you go into the game and you think, well, I want to make sure that we control this area of the game. I want to make sure we control this period of the game. And all of a sudden, nobody had any control. And I love it when it goes like that. Absolutely love it. And we've been here before. Gaelic football has the power to do those sort of things. It just restores your faith in everything, and it just makes yesterday just felt as if there was endless possibilities for an endless amount, like when you walk away from it, an endless amount of possibilities for an endless amount of teams, yet it probably will come back down to the same sort of crew. But at the same time, it was a wonderful game, and the two lads, like Walsh and Clifford, I mean, like, I know we don't, like, certainly I don't have the vocabulary to describe what was going on yesterday, but like Walsh kicked the point and the ball came straight back down the field and Clifford go, nah, not happening, not on my watch. And he kicked one which was equally as good, if not better. And it's phenomenal, lads. What those guys are doing is just not, it's not easy done. Easy done.
No, and I mean, what's amazing about it is that this is the kind of thing that, you know, a lot of the more negative analysis of Gaelic football would have you believe that that sort of thing isn't done anymore. You know, that you don't have that level of individual flair on the biggest of days, Paul. So to see two guys, you know, within two reasonably structured teams have this shootout amongst themselves was just absolutely, I was mind blown.
It was. And there were that many, like, moments of the game where you just said to yourself, did that really happen? And you didn't even have time to take a breath. Oisín, you're spot on. And then, because down the other end of the field, you know, Clifford would do something else. The two boys were just on it, and it was a joy to watch. And they weren't operating in acres of space either. Like, that's what made it even more impressive. Like, if you think about Clifford's marks that he got, he was jumping between two guys, right? He was the one on the front foot. He was the one who had the intent to go and win the ball. Or if you talk about any of Walsh's points, but in particular the one under the Hogan stand where he duped two Kerry lads, and which was one thing, but then to kick the ball at full pace from 45 yards out at an angle and hit it over the black spot is just ridiculous, carry on. Like, it really is, and you can't overestimate it or underestimate it. It's just so, so impressive. When you are playing in an All-Ireland final against the best of the best, getting man-marked and getting against a defensive structure that's way more than just being man marked and being able to do that, do them things. You can't overestimate it. You see guys doing it at a club game and it makes it it goes viral on Twitter and you say, yeah, but that's with space. Like, a lot of good players can do anything with space. Probably can't do everything that them lads did yesterday with space, but they can do amazing things. But to do it with no space is what makes it so much more impressive. I was blown away by it. And like, I think, to be fair, we probably on this podcast questioned both of these teams throughout the year, right? And fairly, I think, just, and it's not in any way in a negative sense to question them. It's just to, you're asking questions of whether they can do what they did yesterday. And I think both teams actually answered all of the questions I had. Anyway, I can speak for myself. On Kerry, to start with, like, yeah, I questioned whether they could play against the Swarm defence. That was really the only thing that was outstanding. Now, whether they could live up to the pressure. And yes, like, whatever about Clifford being absolutely out of this planet, them as a unit, their turnovers, for me, was the point that I just said to me that they're on, right? And, like, we always had a thing with Dublin, actually Jim's time, with Pat. We win the tackle count, you win the game. And it kind of does always plan out that way. If you are the more intense team, and if you definitely win the turnover count, the chance of you winning the game are a lot higher. And I think they had double the number of turnovers that Galway had in the game. And the number of scores they got off, I think, was 8.
Kerry got 7 points off 8 Galway turnovers in the second half.
Yeah. See, that's, and you could see the turnovers when Galway did win them, Kerry were still set. They weren't cutting them open. So back to that, they've answered all the questions. Galway too, because they were brilliant. All they did was run out of steam. They had no bench strength, and that can be remedied, like you said, Murph. Like, that's, they can take so much from it. But they went pound for pound with Kerry right through the game. There were some signs, I thought, early doors, that what Galway were doing, I always found when I played against Kerry, right, that, like, they always picked off easy scores and we always had to score difficult scores. And there was a sense yesterday that the Galway scores were coming a little bit harder, even though they were coming. They were just, think about McDade's points, or if you see, I don't know, if you've seen a heat map of where their scores were, I can guarantee you they were outside the 21 yeah. on the sides. But yeah.
There were a couple of Shanes were definitely from like Rose Ed, so I mean that would suggest that they were picking off scores in the D, but you're absolutely right, yeah.
That was always a telling sign where, like, Kerry, even though they weren't scoring, they were getting opportunities within the scoring zone. They just weren't clinical, and you knew that was going to turn. But
That was a weird feeling, actually, Paul, at half time, when obviously as a Galway supporter you're like, God, Galway have done so much right there, maybe they should be further ahead. But then you look at it and you say, right, well, they've kicked one wide and Kerry have kicked 8 wides and Kerry are a point behind. So it's kind of hard to say that Galway have, you know, should have had more on the board at half time than they actually had, when you consider, as you say, that so many of the points were from outside of the scoring zone.
Yeah, and I think the Kerry ones were actually unforced errors too. Like, they weren't actually pressure. You think
Gainey, yeah.
Gainey's points, he'd slip them over any day of the week. And even Clifford swung one on his left and was pretty straight, but he didn't have as much time. But still, it was for him, it was an unforced error. Anyway, they were the only small things that I felt were going against, Galway early doors. But Kerry just you know, played right for the 70 minutes. They kept they got stronger as the game went on.
4 points in 5 minutes to ice the All Ireland final, Oisin. That's the question answered. That's what winners do. And I think that in ways it makes it all the more satisfying for Kerry that was how they won. That they ended up winning this match.
I actually think even the way they won the All Ireland, the way they closed out the semi final, and then the way they operated yesterday. And you know, I would say that if you were to give me 5 guesses at the thing that would malfunction for Kerry in an All-Ireland final, I would not be saying the final third or in front of goals. And it looked as if that was going to be their Achilles heels, which is absolutely astounding, really is. Like, the 7 first half wides and the manner of them, and where, you know, Paul talks about a heat map, but, like, you know, if I wanted shots in an All-Ireland final, I'd take Gainey's, I'd take O'Brien's, I'd even take Clifford's, you know, as really good opportunities to kick the ball over the bar. So definitely 5 of those opportunities were quite I wouldn't say simple, but there were simple-ish opportunities. So if you were to ask me, as I say, you know, where would Kerry be let down all over the field? I didn't think Kerry were particularly good in the middle of the field either. So Kerry won the All-Ireland, you know, and this is before people start to go mental. I'm not still questioning where they're at. I'm just saying that they won it with a few things maybe not going exactly the way they had planned. But I thought, you know, defensively, a number of players stepped up. O'Sullivan in the corner, Foley, Morley, Obugliok, which is completely not the right pronunciation, and Gavin White as well. So they got a lot from their defence, and then up top, obviously, they have, you know, the magic man. So, I would say they won the All Ireland in a pretty un-Kerry way, and I think that will please them the most.
Well, an un-Kerry way. It, with the forwards misfiring, but then at the same time they do end up with 20 points, and you know, a throwback to the great Kerry footballers of the past winning it for them almost single-handedly.
Yeah, when I say that, I mean, like, you know, the turnover thing is huge, and it was huge against Dublin, and it was 8-2. Kerry got 8 points from turnovers. Galway got 2. All the rest of the stats, anyway, you look at the stats, more or less sort of mirror what the other team was doing. So that's a huge stat, and I think that's the thing again that'll please them, because what was the question marks at the start of the year? You know, if Kerry go into the trenches, who's sticking a hand up apart from Clifford? And now he's got a couple of buddies who are happy to do that. There's a bit of steel about them. Probably actually a little bit like Galway, except, you know, what the lads have already said, you know, I think Affinity coming off, I just didn't see that at all, because me and Murph have spoken about Finian O'Leary before, and there's absolutely no question, in, you know, as far as work rate and getting up and down the pitch and fulfilling that role half forward, but it's not ammunition, and Galway needed ammunition going into the last 10 minutes of the game, and taking Finnerty away, regardless of how poor he was playing, took one of their gunslingers out, I thought.
There's obviously two sides to every game, you know, and there's the offensive side, and you look at what obviously Shane Walsh and David Clifford did, and it was exceptional. But there was also so much to admire in how Galway shut down Sean O'Shea and Kerry shut down Damien Comer for large portions of the game.
Yeah.
And actually, I was thinking of this, Paul, right? They both struggled so badly. Their markers had more shots from play on the goal than they had. Silk had one wide blocked that... Walsh hit the 45 from, and Foley had an effort in the first half. Neither Comer nor O'Shea were actually able to get one shot off from play, and like, in a way, it kind of makes what Clifford and Walsh did even better when you look at like players of the quality of Damien Comer and Sean O'Shea getting shut out of a game like this, just down to the hard work and the, I think, the tactical acumen of both sidelines to help their players achieve that.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I was making earlier, is that, like, that's why what the guys did was just so impressive. But, like, when you're in games like that, how you start is important. And the two lads started so well, Walsh and Clifford. But if early doors you're getting locked out, like what it's like a contrast in, you know, view of what can happen in an All-Ireland final here, right? Because, and I've experienced both in games through my career. I'm sure you have too, Oisín, where you're getting shut out. And if early doors, you just can't get your hands on the ball. And you're working, probably if you look at Comer's work rate, he probably did more miles than what Walsh did, right? But he was just probably headless, probably just not, you know, because that's what can happen to you when you're getting man-marked so intensely. And the other factors then start seeping in, like the 82,000 people that are in the stadium, like the heat, like the fact that it's an All-Ireland final. Well, this is my, I'm talking from personal experience. They start creeping in when the doubts start creeping in, because you're getting so badly marked or so tightly marked, right? But if you catch the first ball and just lay it off, that sometimes can be your trigger that I'm in the game. Or if you get a lovely score, which is even better, or you win a kick out or something like that, that's just the trigger for you to get into the game. And I just felt both teams needed it. And O'Shea, he missed his first free, which is literally probably the worst free he could have got of any free, because it was a carbon copy of the one he kicked against Dublin. And I'd say, I you can nearly hear the people, I was certainly doing anyway, in the stand saying, this is a carbon copy of the free, right? He's obviously going to slot this over, and he scuffs it, you know, which can easily happen. But they're the little things that can make such a big difference. They give oxygen to the person who's marking you, the guy who's going man to man with you, he can just get in your ear. But they also just deflate you that little bit as a player when you're trying to be the one looking for space, looking for a shot off, or just looking to get on a ball. And I think it's really important. I spoke last week about how Jack Barry did a great job in the body checking, like anybody who's man marking Clifford, or it only happened once or twice, but that's all it needs to be, is once or twice, just to get Sean O'Shea on the ball early, or to get Comer on the ball early. And you really do have to work with your best players to get them on the ball. And that's a learning I think both teams will take. I think Sean O'Shea has experienced it a couple of times now where he's getting shut out, and they've done such a good job against Dublin to create space for him. Silk just shows the job that Silk did too. So you can look at his both ways. To Marcus did an unbelievable job. But then you can also say that sometimes guys have to sacrifice their own game for others to create space. And Comer, I was thinking in the first half, was doing it purposely to leave Walsh in close to goal and to create space. Mm. And that ended up turning, while it wasn't great for him, it was good for the team.
Yeah, Damien Comer was out on the Cusick stand touchline for a large part of the game. And that did open up certainly a lot of room for Walsh. I mean, the way the game started, Oisin, the 3 points from Marks in the first 23 minutes from Kerry, I mean, I think a lot of goalie people expected Derry to do it, and it didn't happen. But Kerry, literally the first three balls they got, David Moran's first possession was just a route up in the air that Gleeson just about handled. But I think everyone knew then that the first 10 minutes was going to be that aerial onslaught that kind of goalie we were expecting Derry to do in the semi-final.
Yeah, I think Kerry had a real intent about, you know, they were going to bit of a gut check, you know, very, very early on. The fact that Kerry only had 2 points in play at half time definitely, you know, had to be some sort of concern, because you would think that, you know, if that high ball continued, that, you know, Gaul would eventually, you know, find it out. But that's the thing about mixing up the play, again, that I talked about against with Derry, is that even if you kick it out, even if you kick it in a couple of times and lose it, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you've seen how that bit deeper that the goal just sort of fell in. You know, even on numerous occasions, like Heaney was the last man in front of that full back line, and he was being encouraged to be even closer. So the fact that they had kicked those initial high balls in, give them that extra little bit of space out the field a little bit, you know, to actually in the first half just to have opportunities, not to kick the scores because they didn't, but to have the opportunities. And again, that's how, you know, how important it is to mix things up. So if you know, if Kerry were going to continue to try and play this nice ball in front of Clifford, if they were going to try and run the ball through the lines all the time, but no, there was a nice little mix as far as Kerry were concerned. And I think that's something that Kerry will have learned from their own mistakes, but also from watching the likes of Derry play against Galway, that, you know, Galway looked extremely comfortable that day because there was nothing for them really to think about outside of, you know, how we track the runners.
I saw Malky Clerk made the point today that Pádraig Joyce spent about 6 minutes in his post-match presser. He says normally that's about, you know, that's not by any means short, because the losing manager doesn't want to hang around too long. But he said it probably would have been a lot shorter if it wasn't for the bee he had in his bonnet about the free that put Kerry ahead ultimately, wasn't it, at the
17-16.
Certainly saw free. It's the kind of thing you don't normally, you whatever happened there, you normally see it just pass off and nothing being given either way, I would say. I don't know what you guys felt. Oisin, do you want to go first? Would Galway have cause to be upset about this?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think, you know, when Spillane leaves his arm in, yeah, he grabs it, but he lets go of it very quickly. Even when we slowed it down, it still seemed like a very short period of time. I thought it was a little bit, but look at, you know, a ref, that comes up in a referees committee this week, I guarantee everybody go, great spot, well done. You know, that's a free all day long. See, I do think that the bee in the bonnet that Pádraig Joyce had started a number of weeks ago when Sean Horsham was appointed the referee of the game. And I think we created a problem for himself. And this is by no means me saying that Sean Horsham, I thought he managed the game fairly well. But we leave ourselves open, you know, and we left ourselves open again. Do you know what I mean? And that was, Pádraig Joyce was asked about this.
The situation here being that he's a clubmate of Paddy Talley.
He's a Galbally man, yeah. He's a clubmate of Paddy Talley.
The Kerry coach,
I'm not questioning the man. I'm not saying that that was in any way anything to do with the free kicks. But do you get where Pádraig Joyce is irked about that 2 weeks ago? He brings that into the game, and all of a sudden there is two fairly contentious frees right at the end of the game, and you're asked about it, and you're after losing an All Ireland final. So you're going to be annoyed about it. Simple as that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, but the referee thing, like, I don't know, as I think Jack O'Connor made the point at the time, what are you supposed to, it's quite a small world, the GAA world, and somebody's always potentially bound to have some connection with somebody else, and it even happened with Galway earlier in the Championship.
But it is Owen, but it's something still to be, as I say, I'm not saying that Sean Horsham had a, but it's still something that surely should have been in the minds of the people who are appointing a referee. Like, let's leave this that, nobody can say anything, whereas referees appointed and go, well, hold on a second. I get what you're saying. I absolutely get what you're saying. I'm not saying that swayed the decisions or anything else, or it was a poor appointment. But we still need to think about these things because that's the first thing that was pointed out whenever the appointment was made.
Yeah, when I seen the free initially, I remember just saying straight away, I saw free. That was the initial sound, and I just got on with it. I didn't think again about it until I actually seen the Joyce's comments. And I look back at it again, and I said, "It was soft, but I said it about a couple of games this year. If it's a technical free, they are going to be soft, right? And this is where I prefer technical frees to be given rather than not given. So it's a kind of a catch-22. If they're trying to cut out something in the game that we don't like, which is when the forward or the attacking player in possession grabs the hand of the defender." Well then, yeah, that's a technical free, and I think we need to get comfortable with technical frees if we want to have a game that's, more professional, essentially, because that's what they are. I genuinely at the end of the game just felt that there were no question marks, and I still don't think there are. That wasn't enough for me. I don't think it would have made enough of a difference. Anyway, I think if you look at the game in its totality in the second half, Galway only kicked 2 points in the last 20 minutes. I think that's where they did it once they went for 14. So that in itself, it was that period of time they just lost it. So one moment of the game, and that being so innocuous, I can't see it making a massive difference. But I can understand where he's coming from based. I didn't realize, I actually didn't know that he was a club man at Paddy Talley. But you are right, Owen. Like, we are such a small country, right? Like, if we want to have cross contamination of coaches and in from one county to the other, and the club set up, the way we're structured, these things are going to happen. So I suppose there's integrity of the games, and referees in particular, they have to be upheld to. So I don't see this being a big issue.
Oisin, you said earlier on that you thought there was a lot to, I have to say, when I saw Clifford post-match, and he mentioned himself how confident he felt that they would win and that he would get his All-Ireland and all that kind of stuff. The fact that he now has one in the bag, that pressure is off him. Kerry as a county are back on it now. I don't know how long Jack O'Connor is going to hang around. A lot of the stars seem to be aligning for them to potentially be somewhat dominant, I would have thought, in the next few years. But you said very early on that you actually watching that thought there's a lot of counties watch that final thinking there's hope for us to potentially be competitive.
Yeah, well, I just think there's a good crew now in the pack. I think you're 100% right. I do think the pressure on Kerry was incredible, and I do think the question marks were huge. However, I do think that all of those question marks and all of those doubts emanate in their own county. That's the first thing. They are their own harshest critics. I mean, I don't want to keep going back to this game, but like whenever I was getting last year, I thought at one stage, especially after the Tyrone game in the league, I just thought, like, How do you handle it? How do you handle this crowd? You just can't. They just have way too much. And like, it was ex-Kerry players who were trying to bring me back down to earth about the performance, not the opposite way around. Yeah. And so that tells you everything you need to know. So like, they will be judged now, I think, a lot more fairly because they've won in All-Ireland. Because everybody could see what the potential was and, you know, how good players they had and, you know, how many stars they have. And now also an organisation, a defensive setup that seems to be working for them. Not seems to be working for them, is working for them. I can't help myself.
One goal all championship. I think that's fairly decent defending. Yeah,
three goals all year. One of them was a penalty. So if you continue, that's magnificent. And Shane, we watched Shane Ryan, I think, as a goalkeeper grow in front of our eyes as well. Had a huge part to play in all of what Kerry did defensively. So they have a huge monkey off the back. I just looking funny. I was watching on Saturday morning. I was watching Mark O'Connor play with Geelong, and I was thinking, my God, thank God he's over there. Because if he was here, like, you know what I mean? Like, the man is unbelievable, and he was an unbelievable Gaelic footballer as a minor and that, and like how they would love to have him in. But they have that Oakenbar who is back as well, and there's a number of guys there who, like, the thing I would say about Kerry is that, you know, a lot of guys have got a lot of game time this year. You know, there's been guys who have been tried and tested, and the marked difference yesterday, even just looking at the substitutions, not even looking at the quality, but looking at the experience that they have, the game time that they've had in the last number of years, and look at that in comparison to where Galway are at. So they're in a wonderful position, and it looks as if a lot of their top men are at a really good age. Like if 28, probably that has come back a little bit, but if 26 or 7 is peak, David Clifford's 23. So
and the funny thing is that was one thing that struck me yesterday, is that like, I played against everybody that played in that game yesterday, and I haven't played in bloody for 3 or 4 years. Like, they're not like nippers. Like, they've been knocking around for a few years, but that I think makes in some ways an even more impressive coaching achievement, you know, and management achievement in itself. And there's a lot of facets to that. There's obviously the Paddy Talley impact defensively, you know, even just the way they've changed roles of Tadhg Morley, and you know, then they've improved the defensive unit as a whole, but even the individual one-on-ones, like, they're now great man markers. But also from a psychological point of view, Tony Griffin is impacting. We mentioned on this before, and that's what I suppose keeps players in the present. That's what makes sure that in, down the stretch, you're not getting caught up with the fact that you're going to win All-Ireland, you kick 4 points in the trot. You know, like, they're them little things that are kind of intangible, hard to measure, but they're measured when you win All-Irelands, and then they're criticised when you don't. So I think it's really important to note that. And like, you look at Stephen O'Brien yesterday, he had a cracking game, cracking first half, looked dangerous every time he had the ball. You know, like, and so there's a lot of experience in that group too. So it's a lovely blend. And I do feel that Jack O'Connor has done a phenomenal job, and even just to make those changes, like at halftime, you know, even beforehand, we were saying we didn't think that Moran was going to get a full game out of him. And, you know, Gainey, you know, wasn't playing well. But, like, when a manager wouldn't make that call, they'd say, go out, we'll give you 10 minutes. But he didn't. Yeah. He made the call straight away. And then, like, them guys go and they, you know, coming on at halftime, I always felt it's a lot easier than coming on with 20 minutes to go, because the game has stopped anyway, and you can just get yourself into the game that bit easier. So that's cuteness. That's not cuteness. That's experience. That's an experienced manager making good decisions and tough decisions at the right time. So credit has to go to that as well. You know, to Kerry's setup for what they've done.
Yeah,
that's a good point actually on the Paul Gainey one, because I actually thought about it in real time myself, and I thought, he deserves 10 more minutes. Just give him 10 more minutes. Mm. He could turn all this around. Because he was handling a bit of ball and that, and all he needed was one score, and then I think he would have took off. But I suppose that's why Jack O'Connor's Jack O'Connor, and I'm who I am.
What we don't know is, and I, you know, it has it, I guess, they might have had a squad game last week and Killian Spillane shot the lights out. And sometimes that can carry you as a player, you notice, like, you know, and Gini just looked a little bit off in the first half. And maybe it's because he knew that Killian was breathing down his neck and he just got the nod. Mm. And then that's why the decision's made quicker. That's from my own experience of seeing that, you know, so.
Yeah.
But they're good calls, tough calls, and they paid off.
Yeah, and, you know, without kind of labouring the point, you know, Kerry whipped David Moran at half-time, you know, and Galway left Paul Conroy out there until the 55th minute, and probably, you know, 10 minutes before that, it looked like Conroy's race was pretty much run. And, like, that's just the reality of the size and the strength of the respective benches, really.
This is it. It's a 20-man game now. You can't get through. You can't win All-Ireland with even 17 good players. You have to have five lads coming off the bench that are good players, because five of them coming off the bench aren't all going to have an impact. You know, so, you know, two or three of them having an impact is out of that five. So they all have to be good players and on par and breathing down the neck of the guys who are getting the 15 jersey, and Kerry have that.
I kind of feel like we should go back to Walsh and David Clifford for a second here, right? Because
happy to.
There's a couple of points I want to make, actually. First of all, is it's amazing to be talking about a football game and to be able to be as enthusiastic and excited about it as, like, the hurling. I know you guys have spoken about this in the past, that you watch hurling analysts and they're free to just, like, vent about how brilliant their sport is. Like, you are talking about the pinnacle of the sport. Like, it's not even so much that, like, what we saw yesterday was like a return to the good old days of kind of of lads being free to kick it. Like, they were kicking points that were, like, a lot better than anything we've ever seen, you know? And I think that, like, it bears us pausing on for a minute, that you're talking about, like, the best performance by a player. I would say a best performance by a forward, certainly, on a losing All-Ireland final team by Shane Walsh. Like, the point
Peter Cannon kicked a few points, Smurf, against the Dubs. 95.
Yeah, I went looking for it, actually, because it was like, that's kind of that was one of the big examples. He kicked 11 points of Tyrone's 12 points in the 95 final, but all but one of them were from frees. So he kicked 1 point from play in all that, and he was only fouled for one of those frees that he kicked himself personally. So, I mean, I think Walsh is out there on his own. Like, the point he kicked in the second half from the Cusack stand side, I was quite close to it. I have never seen a ball kicked so high in my entire life. And it's weird. I was, like, out on the pitch, like, a couple of days after the Dublin-Kerry game, and I was looking at where Shaun Shea's free was from. And I was like, if you gave me 100 balls, if you give, like, a regular club player 100 balls from this, like, how often does that ball go over? And then you look at what Walsh did yesterday and what Clifford did, and you're like, this is not like, oh, if a guy had been a bit closer or if a guy had been a bit further away. It's like, it's just not possible for, like, the majority of footballers to do what they did yesterday. And, like, to do it in an All-Ireland final just blows my mind.
The purity in which they strike the ball on a consistent basis is the most difficult thing to do, operating in small, little areas, somebody breathing down your neck, somebody trying to get a block in, at the pace, 82,500 people, the most extreme pressure, realising that if you fuck this up, the chances are your county's not going to, has no chance of winning All-Ireland. Like, imagine we turned up yesterday and Shane Walsh didn't do what Shane Walsh done. Like, we will be having a completely different conversation about the game itself. But the purity at which these guys strike the ball off, you know, very little backlift sometimes. As I say, with somebody breathing down their neck, it's nothing short of incredible.
With Clifford, I thought it was amazing as well, Lushin, just that he was doing it in a team that was malfunctioning. They were very jiggy, yeah. I think was the word that Jack O'Connor used in the first half. It's kind of strange that not all the other forwards, but certainly the inside forwards were struggling, and yet he played as though his team were, you know, marching forward relentlessly. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, and just the way he picked up the baton, do you know what I mean? And like, it didn't seem to annoy him that, you know, that the things were malfunctioning around him. Like, you know,
He got one bad pass. He got one that went over the sideline. I think it was from David Moran. And he nearly started to ball him out. And then he's like, okay, look, he knows.
Yeah, he gave it a little bit of a... But even his even Geaney had kicked a couple of wides and you give him a bit of a slap on the back of the head. Like, you know, that's probably, you know, Kerry's most experienced player, just letting him know, you know, it's all right, like, I got this shit, like, you know. So,
and the thing about that, like, which is different to the Dublin team, the recent Dublin team, is like, in the Dublin setup, there was never, Kerry play everything through Clifford, right? And they want to play everything through him, like, you know, and I think that even makes it even more impressive, is that, like, you're set up in a way that, like, as you can see it, like, they get the ball 45, 50 yards out and they're looking up, where is he, right? And, you know, and to Galway knew this was the case, right? So they were setting up all 2 weeks of analysis to try and figure out, okay, which way does he run? What movements does he like to do? Where should we position the sweeper? And good forwards who are physically conditioned to a certain level and yet still can't stop him. Like, that one, that high ball that came in, which was literally, wasn't even a good ball, right? It just got lumped in.
It was disgusting. Like, oh my God.
I wouldn't have went for it. I'd play full forward now. I would have went like that.
I'd be shaking my head like, what the hell? Like, how am I supposed to work in these under these conditions?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have went for it. And yet then you see, like, between, you see a Galway player and you see two Galway players, one either side, and you just see this, like, you know, green and gold jerseys running through the middle and just darting up in the air and winning. And it wasn't even as if he was getting, there was no jumping with him. Like, he was just quicker. He anticipated the play. He just knew what was going to happen. He read where the ball was going to go. And he knows that, like, the beauty of that is he knows that, like, the ball's always going to come in because that's just what they do, you know, and they just put the ball in. So it's like, it's just, yeah, you can't overestimate how good he was. And he's 23 years of age as well. And, like, then you see him after the game. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a bit soft now. I've got kids. But, like, you see him with his kid and he's doing the laps and he's just, it was just, it, I suppose, it's hard not to be emotional watching an All-Ireland final, but when you see little things like that and him and David Moore, it's just class, you know, grounds the whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It did remind me, Murph, though, of what you said last week, is that, you know, if you're going to lose an All-Ireland, don't let David Clifford, you know,
yeah,
you know, destroy your dreams.
Yeah, but at the same time, it was like, it was a privilege to be there to see him, like, yeah, that's how good he was, you know, and the obviously, there was so much pressure on Clifford, but there was so much pressure on Shane Walsh as well, in, like, a kind of a more existential way, you know, in that for many years, I saw Keith Duggan writing in the Irish Times today, and he described it very aptly, that Shane Walsh nearly became the embodiment of Galway football, in that talent to burn, but when it gets down to the crunch, what's there? And I, after the Mayo game, I think it was the Mayo game, or the Roscommon game, actually, the Connacht final, I asked you two guys, it was the week kind of when the Conn versus David Clifford argument was first kind of being broached. And I was like, you guys were more positive about kind of Shane Walsh's standing in the game even than I was, I think, in that you were saying, I think everyone recognised how good this guy is. And that, again, maybe Shane Walsh's harshest critics were in Galway in that, like, you know, we see the ability, but can we see it consistently? So that's what Shane Walsh was up against. Like, this idea that he has to prove himself or all these questions will continue to be asked about him. And now, you know, even in defeat, like, there are no other questions about him. Like, he is a genuinely sort of a generational talent. And I think that's a huge pressure to take into an All-Ireland final as well and to carry it so lightly, Yosh.
I think that comes a little bit. See that parochial stuff? That comes a little bit from, you know, club football. You know, he's played a league game and somebody's done really well on him because, you know, he probably couldn't be bothered. You know, it's a Wednesday evening. It's wet. It's, you know, there's 14 people there to watch him. You know, it's just not his playground. It's not his arena. Therefore, you know, you if you're watching him on a consistent basis, maybe your opinion of him maybe is skewed a little bit. But, like, there's no questioning about him now. He's like, again, just a little bit like we talked about Kerry answering questions. I mean, Shane Walsh has answered all those questions. He doesn't need to answer any more questions. Yeah, he of course he wants to kick on and win All Ireland, but, like, his ability has never been in question. Maybe the last piece of the jigsaw for him was the mindset thing, you know, when people question his mindset and doing it on the big stage. But look, he's done it on the big stage. And I'll tell you another thing too, he's tough. He's tough physically, he's tough mentally. And that's two of the attributes you need, along with having the ability that he has.
Also, I think, Murph, the consistency thing is maybe something that people within a county might care about more. Whereas if you're watching it as a neutral, all I care about is, oh, Shane Walsh is in there. I know he might light this thing up.
Yeah.
And if he, you know, he's one of those players you know has potential to do it. So maybe that's why people were giving him a bit more slack from outside the county. But yeah, he was brilliant. Clifford was brilliant. A really good season, I thought, and a brilliant All-Ireland final. And, of course, amazing analysis from you two boys throughout. We won't wait too long to chat to you again. But listen, lads, thanks so much for all the help throughout the championship.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations, they are amazing.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
I feel I do have to apologise to you, by the way, Kieran.
Well, I accept your apology
in advance.
But I certainly deserve. I know
moment,
that for a fact.
There was a
There's
moment
a lot that you should be apologising to me for. But anyway,
there was a moment on Saturday night where we were just walking along Shop Street, taking in the atmosphere around Galway City ahead of the during International Arts Week, ahead of the All-Ireland Final, right before Galway Race Week. There's a lot going on in Galway. It's a happening spot. That's what I will say. I'm pleased to report Galway is still rocking at the moment. But you turned to me and you said, hang on a second. I've been talking a lot about Galway for the last week. Who do you want to win the game? And I hesitated. I hesitated before saying, well, Galway, of course. There I'm walking around with, like, you know, the Galway flags festooned around the place.
Far too late.
There was a hesitation.
But, what was the hesitation?
The hesitation was because I just really love David Clifford. I really wanted... Aside from Galway to win for my pal Murph and, you know, the underdogs and all that sort of stuff, which was my answer was, in the end, Galway. So I put that on
in
the record.
In the end, Galway,
but
yes.
I did, and I was delighted to see Clifford win his All-Ireland. I've got no ill feeling towards Kerry. I know they're a big rival of Dublin's over the years, Ken, but, you know, you got to feel, they always, you know, they conjure up great memories.
Well, I thought it was great for them. I was pleased for them, actually. I was delighted for them. It's the first All-Ireland win in the 21st century, isn't it?
Not quite.
They've gotten they've won the last 15 All Ireland crying championships, so it's great that the tears can finally stop. The tears can stop flowing for
you,
at least.
You obviously have strong memories
months.
Of the great Kerry team of the 2000s, the noughties, I should say.
Well, there was a close personal friend of mine, Kieran Starr Donaghy, was a member of that team. Did they get across the line in the end, those guys?
Well, they obviously were beaten three times by Tyrone in that decade, but that's not what we're here to talk about. They did also win in 2000, 2004, 2006 and 2009, which you'd have to say that's quite successful. 2014 as well.
They've won quite a few All-Irelands this century, and you can tot this one up. The famine is over.
Why have they been crying so much?
Because 8 years feels like 8 years. Believe it or not, Ken, is the third longest stretch they've gone without winning an All-Ireland. So that's why you know, in Kerry terms, it's a big weight for most counties. It's not that much of a problem.
I am delighted for them. I would just like to say a hearty well done to Kerry on finally doing the business.
That's big, yeah. Classy.
There was another bit of
Dubs fan.
There was another bit of GAA news over the weekend, though. You guys, Brian Cody stepping down as Kilkenny manager, somewhat stealing the thunder. Not on Sunday, but a lot of the talk on Saturday was of Cody rather than of the upcoming All Ireland final.
A hurling man to the end.
Yeah.
Now that the GAA intercounty season is over, I feel free to... Well, no, Brian, there is one more game that actually quite a number of people are interested in. But, you know, you do you, as they say. You do you, champion, even as Nick Kyrgios would say.
Even the way he did it, it was just... It was a county board statement with no quotes from Cody that I saw anyway. It was just Brian has informed us that he has finished up his career and he just lets everybody else talk about how great he is. Apparently it was rumbling for a few days. Everyone was saying, oh, it's no surprise, but maybe you have to be following Kilkenny GAA more closely to realize that it was about to happen.
There had been rumblings.
Yeah.
There had been rumblings, I think, from Wednesday.
Yeah.
They're like, people on Twitter saying, oh, statement imminent tomorrow. Mm. And then tomorrow became Friday and still no statement.
Is it one final dig at Shefflin, do you think? Retire now while Shefflin is currently employed with another county, making it very hard for him to cut ties with Galway and step straight into the Kilkenny job.
I kind of feel overreach. Like what with Brian having been in charge of this team for, you know, a quarter of a century, the decision to end something like that... Usually there are more motivations than just spite at the end of that. I mean, that's just me. I mean, maybe that is actually the key driving force of Brian Cody's being. I mean, maybe that's not actually that outlandish. But as to who will actually take over, well, that's kind of the interesting question. Can Shefflin walk away from Galway and take up the... I mean, I don't know. There is obviously Eddie Brennan, who has... compiled quite an interesting managerial CV. Derek Ling was in charge of the Kilkenny under 20s this year and did a very good job with them. So there are numerous candidates on. But goodbye, Brian. We hardly knew ye.
Nor did you want us to know ye very well. But there you go. We know ye delivered a lot of All-Ireland titles to Kilkenny, as everybody has been making the point over the last couple of days. Ken is back, as you're here. We've got a football podcast out later today and plenty more football during the week for you guys, our World Service members. SecondCaptains.com is the place to sign up for only a fiver a month plus VAT. You'll also hear all episodes ad-free if you become a member. The Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Murph. Thank you, well done, Murph.
Garamagas, Garamagas, Akina, Big Lo, Ella, Egan Borak.
Thanks for listening. Hopefully, talk to you during the week.
Whose phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.